Hello, everyone, and welcome to the podcast. In today's episode, we speak with Carlos, co-founder at Simple Proof, a startup focused on data integrity solutions and how these apply to elections, a topic we hear plenty of lately. We hope you enjoy the content. If you do, please remember to like, follow, or share, as this helps us greatly. As a reminder, this podcast is for educational purposes only.
Build with Bitcoin is a proud affiliate partner of River. I've personally used River for years, and I highly recommend the product and the company. If you would like a seamless start to your Bitcoin-only financial services, use our exclusive link below, partner.river.com/buildwithbitcoin.
Welcome to Build with Bitcoin. I'm co-host Israel, joined with Lynn, and today we have the pleasure of welcoming Carlos from Simple Proof. Carlos, welcome.
Mucho gusto. Hello, everyone.
So, Carlos, you're one of the three co-founders of Simple Proof, and your goal is information integrity. We're really excited about this conversation because I don't know about your world, but in my world, it feels I'm a U.S. citizen, even though I live in Mexico. And so I've been through the Mexico elections, and now I'm ramping up to the U.S. elections, and all my friends and family just seem to have incredible anxiety about outcomes and also concern about the validity of the vote counts. And so I think this will be an issue coming up. I think we're already expecting it might be a point of contention when the November elections happen in the U.S. And you, with Simple Proof, have worked on a solution for voter integrity based on the Bitcoin blockchain, and you've already proven it in presidential elections in Guatemala. So I think this is a technology that everybody needs to know about, that this is out there, it's possible, that there are ways to confirm the integrity of information, not just voter ballots, but starting with that, can you talk a little bit about what Simple Proof is and what you do?
My pleasure. So simpleproof.com, we are a Guatemalan startup, and we started in 2023 with the national elections of Guatemala. That included the presidential election, but it was also everything else. And Guatemala has 9.2 million voters. We produce over 150,000 documents as a result of our elections that are published to the internet. So in the public domain on election night, we have hundreds of thousands of documents that make up the totals of our election. And it's just right out there for anyone to check. But in 2023, the concern was, well, if we're putting information out there in the public domain, couldn't someone use AI to generate, you know, tons of fake documents and create all sorts of chaos? And that's why we were contracted by the Guatemalan elections authorities. And so far, it's been a wild ride. And we are very happy to report that it was a very useful and affordable technology that allows people to differentiate the signal from the noise. So Bitcoin is the underlying technology that we use, specifically the Open Timestamps protocol. And so all of this is done using Bitcoin on-chain without causing blockchain bloat, but facilitating individuals and concerned citizens their power to verify that information has not been tampered with.
And that's one of the beauties of the Bitcoin blockchain, because one of the attributes of Bitcoin technology is that once it is stamped in the Bitcoin blockchain, it is immutable, and so it cannot be changed. And because of the distributed nature of all of the recordings of this information, I mean, it's impossible to change it because you'd have to get consensus from everyone to change it, and it's never been done. So you're basically writing those records onto the Bitcoin blockchain or time chain. So then if somebody changes that information in the future, you go back and you find the record of the real transaction.
Exactly. Right. And so, you know, it doesn't make it impossible for someone to commit fraud, but the way we see it is you reduce about 99% of the attack surface, particularly for an election, because the days after the election are, you know, very vulnerable for anyone to change the narrative. And so what we were able to do for Guatemala was, as soon as the documents reached the internet, within essentially 10 minutes of their creation, which is coincides with how long it takes for Bitcoin to issue a block, you can confirm that the information that was produced was on that block. Therefore, anyone that attempted to attack the election had to do so within those 10-minute intervals. So it's not impossible, but it means that would-be attackers have a much harder time of getting away with some shenanigans. And our position is, you know, with how things and how vulnerable and intense elections have become nowadays, it is very useful to make it harder for people to sow chaos.
And yeah. Carlos, you know, maybe if we can take a step back, because this might sound a little out there for many people, and you know, even myself when I first heard of these types of concepts, I mean, election auditing and Bitcoin don't really seem like they have much to do one with the other, right? So, but before we get into that part, maybe just conceptually time stamping, what's the problem you are solving for, right? And what were the issues in your previous work? And maybe you can speak to your background a little bit as well as an elections auditor. I mean, what kind of problem are we facing here, and what are you solving in this digital world which we're moving into?
For sure. So timestamping is fundamentally what we are discussing. And it's an idea that essentially as old as humanity itself. Our need to determine when something happened. And even in the biological world, there is the concept of carbon dating, right? Like it's dinosaurs or, you know, fossils, etc. When you discover something out in the natural world, it's very useful to know when something happened. And, you know, for example, in the fossil record, by carbon dating something, you can determine whether it's, you know, a few million years old or, you know, several hundred million years old. And just knowing more or less when something occurred has a lot of uses to it, right? We literally live in a four-dimensional, you know, space-time continuum. So the dimension of time is, you know, very relevant. And in the digital age, the issue has been, you know, how do you create timestamps that you can trust? Because in the digital world, you know, anything that we create has a timestamp. You know, a computer, when you create a file, it uses its inborn clock to attach some kind of time to it. But in public records, well, that means that you have to trust someone and someone's clock. This is where the understanding Bitcoin as a time chain, which is how Satoshi Nakamoto referred to the blockchain of Bitcoin, is if the blocks over time consistently occur every 10 minutes, you can use Bitcoin as a clock. And because Bitcoin is the only digital network that isn't controlled by anyone, then technically it's the only clock that we can verify instead of requiring a degree of trust. This is exceedingly useful for elections because, like I said, you can force would-be attackers to only attack you on election night. Again, it's not perfect, but it makes anyone's job wants to sow chaos a lot harder. And so the origins of where this came from is I'm an election auditor based in Guatemala. I previously worked as a volunteer within our system. The voting system in Guatemala is a very beautiful process, similar to Mexico's, in that we empower citizens directly to man their tables. They're responsible for their neighbors' ballots, effectively becoming a type of coin-join coordinator of sorts, where they're custodying their neighbors' ballots and they're mixing people's votes together into these documents. And then finally, they issue the election results that come out of election night. And so in 2019, when I was plugged into the system trying to audit it and verify that the results were accurate, the system collapsed very publicly. People went to jail. Famously, they threw the director of the elections IT department and his second in command into jail and blamed them for all of the problems that occurred. I still have a number of questions from 2019 in Guatemala that I can't answer. And the explanation of why they put these people in jail didn't, you know, fulfill my expectations. But unfortunately, what I realized then was it's a lot harder to audit an election after the fact, and you know when there's a maelstrom of chaos, you know, you need an anchor in the sea of lies that can be generated. And we found that Bitcoin is that anchor, effectively preparing ourselves in 2023 to provide a tool that, as these documents are generated in real time in over 20,000 locations simultaneously, then you use Bitcoin to start to anchor them and generate a timestamp. And like Lynn said, it means that if anyone after the fact tries to create a narrative based on false documents, you can clearly point to which documents originated at the moment in time when in an election, you know, it's a very specific moment. It's election night. So anything outside of that moment in time, you know, immediately is just a part of the noise. Is that helpful?
I guess just maybe adding to your explanation, maybe people, it helps to think of the Bitcoin blockchain or time chain as a database, right? And so when we hear, because this attribute to Bitcoin as money is referred to a lot, that it's immutable money, they're referring to that this database, right? This time stamped database of transactions. And that's what you referred to as, you know, being able to anchor off of that database. So, I mean, no, it's a great explanation. I think it just kind of helps kind of land these two concepts, because they initially sound like they don't have much to do one with the other, right? But it's a massive problem you're attacking.
And so, you know, timestamps specifically, you know, with public records, maybe some folks are familiar with, you know, when you take something into the government, maybe you get a stamp on it that says, oh, this was received on a Tuesday at 12:42 p.m. by the offices, right? And so you can then use that in court to say, well, Your Honor, you know, I met the deadline as it was stipulated, because you can see that there's a stamp that says I submitted it there, right? And so in the case of the physical world, it's just a matter of, you know, does it have the seal of the company, et cetera? But of course, you know, faking a seal is not a difficult thing to do, right? It's trivial to get access to one of those, you know, rubber stamps and then figure out how to, and people have been cheating timestamps for, you know, probably as old as they've ever existed, right? And so Bitcoin becomes this timestamping method where you can't fake it. You, as Lynn said, you would have to find a way to reorg the chain. And you know, if people haven't figured out how to do that to steal Satoshi's, you know, million coin stack, then, you know, a small country like Guatemala can then benefit from all of that data integrity and the protection that Bitcoin allows. And that is the digital energy that's protecting the monetary network, and just essentially borrow off of that at a very low cost basis to the network while benefiting public records in general. And so simple proof, specifically what the future we envision, is a future where all public records issued by all governments everywhere in the world should no longer be mutable. Rather, it would be nice to live in a world where once something happens, once the government says that something occurred, be that a election result or your driver's license or some, you know, speeding ticket you got on the highway, there should be an accompanying timestamp, if it's digital data, to confirm that that piece of digital data is not the result of some AI robot that, you know, someone figured out how to use to manipulate information.
You know, that's interesting, because as I started thinking about this whole problem, I was thinking, well, it solves the problems of the ballots that are cast, but one of the other issues or questions about election integrity has to do with registration. If somebody is voting on behalf of a deceased person, if they are a valid, if they do have voting rights within the jurisdiction. And so by having verified data, you know, that also solves the second problem of, is this person a valid voter, and not just are the votes, you know, verified. So that's I'd like you to dig into a little bit more about the whole vision of simple proof with public records and where else you might see this opportunity of information on the Bitcoin blockchain.
For sure. And if it's helpful, you know, maybe I can show a quick example of how it actually looks like, right? Because people might get a little lost in hearing about this. But the cool thing about the use case that we demonstrated in Guatemala is that you can actually just go and do this yourself, right? My favorite saying within Bitcoin is don't trust, verify. So this is, you know, our webpage, simpleproof.com. I invite anyone to go and see it. But specifically, our first client is this website, which is TREP.GT. It's known as the Election Night Reporting System of Guatemala. You can click one of these buttons to go and check out a specific election. And so here we see that we're looking at the Presidente election. So this is why it's toggled here on the upper left. And so this website allows anyone to verify that the totals are real. They're claiming that 99% of the data is available here, and the database was last updated on June 29th, 2023. And so you can scroll down, see the map. You know, this is Guatemala. Up here on the left is Mexico. Down to the south is El Salvador. And further down, you see these national totals. But the question as a Bitcoiner is, don't trust, verify, right? Like, how do I know that these numbers, 365,028, actually were accumulated by this party? So our system allows you to drill in and pick any number between 1 and 24,500. So if you could toss one out there randomly, and either of you, I'd appreciate that. Between 1 and 24,500.
100.
100. There we go. So I could do any of that. Here, we're just going to look at this one example. But so now I'm looking at table number 100 in this geographic location. And so instead of looking at hundreds of thousands of numbers, I'm looking at much lower numbers. So what the system is saying is these are the votes that occurred at this table. Again, don't trust, verify. If I keep scrolling down, the Guatemalan authorities give us a button here that says ver. It allows us to see these documents that exist in the public domain. The equivalent in the United States is a poll tape or a statement of votes cast is what I've been told they call it in the county clerk systems. But
and
so,
Carlos, just to take a quick pause here, for those listeners who might be tuning into just the audio version of this, Carlos is currently going through the visual example, sharing his screen here, of public records in Guatemala that used Simple Proof to verify the 2023
exactly.
Elections. Is that right?
Exactly. What you're looking at your screen is table number 100. That was signed by Melanie, Carmen, and Anna. And they're saying 293 voters showed up and their votes were distributed in this way. But again, don't trust, verify. How do I know this JPEG isn't from yesterday, right? And so there's a very obvious orange button here that says verify hash. If I click that, I've now left the election night reporting system of the Guatemalan national authorities, which, you know, handled 9.2 million registered voters. So we are not a gigantic place, but it's not a small election. And now I've left in the immutable backup service that was provided by Simple Proof. And all that we do is report this document exists on our database as of June 25th, 2023 at 11:52 p.m. And then because it's a individual JPEG, we obtain the SHA-256, which is a unique identifier that's unique to this JPEG in the universe. It's a series of letters and numbers that only exist in the universe for this JPEG. It's a secure hash algorithm, and no time to go into the details of that, but basically it's fancy cryptography to say this is like equivalent to the fingerprint or the genetic code of this JPEG. And there is verifiable information of this on the Bitcoin blockchain as of June 26 at 12:42 p.m. So within 15 minutes of time, in this case, this is a unique case that took 50 minutes. You can then scroll down and see here is the original source file, which you could download and check against the one that is being published to the internet by the authorities visually, or download it and hash it out yourself. But then in addition, there is an OTS file. And so OTS files stand for Open Timestamps Protocol. I highly encourage folks to visit opentimestamps.org. So what Open Timestamps does is the underlying protocol that ties all of this to Bitcoin. So what you're now seeing on your screen is what's called a Merkle tree. At the bottom of this tree, we find this hash of this file, which starts at 75FF. And that's exactly the same as the hash started previously, 75FF8F. We can see it's the exact same code. So if this code is unique in the universe, then if it keeps going up the tree through a series of other cryptographic proofs, then as long as I keep a record of this proof and then track this document through its orange brick road that I'm showing you here, all the way up its path in this Merkle tree, it'll eventually lead you to a Bitcoin transaction. And all of these individual bricks that you're seeing are all their own individual JPEGs, but more on that later. Finally, you get to what's called the Merkle root. That's the final root or hash in the Merkle tree. And the only difference between the Merkle root and the rest of the tree is that in addition to the hash, it also includes a transaction ID. So if you're running your own Bitcoin node, you're one of the nodes that is protecting the network by validating the rules, you can grab that transaction ID and plug it into your node and go and see the individual transaction that proves that this is on Bitcoin. We facilitate a link to mempool.space. So shout out to that team. It's the Wiz and Friends. And so now on the screen, you're no longer looking at our database. You're looking at the mempool according to mempool.space, and specifically the transaction that we are referencing for time. This transaction includes a timestamp of June 26 at 42 a.m., which is the same timestamp that I was showing you earlier. So we are using this transaction on Bitcoin as the stamp for the rest of this data. Further down in the details section, I can bring up what's called the opReturn function. And for those that don't know what opReturn is, it's imagine a transaction on Bitcoin is like a check. When you write a check, you write the date, so the timestamp, you write to whom you're paying and the amount, but there's always also a space for memos or just arbitrary data where you could say, maybe this is like your month's rent. So what we are doing is including in that memo space, this unique hash, the SHA-256, which is the Merkle root of our Merkle tree. And so by just using one transaction that occupied 200 some odd bytes of the Bitcoin block, so 234 bytes in this case, out of a 1 megabyte block, for that one small transaction, we actually created an anchor for all of these JPEGs within that moment. So it's not the individual votes, it's not one transaction per document, it's actually as many documents as we received within those 10 minutes, all anchored into one Bitcoin block, proving that this document does indeed originate from election night, making this public domain election result document a verifiable document from election night in Guatemala.
Okay, so two quick questions there, mm-hmm. Carlos. One, just to maybe summarize what you just went through, you basically were able to cryptographically verify that election result from that specific table wasn't tampered with, right?
We can prove that that document exists in the universe from that moment in time. So what happened in the few minutes before it reaching us and our database, that is where I'm saying like it's a very small window, but potentially an attacker could have entered and you know changed the data there. But in our case, we have witnesses at the table, people have multiple copies, so there are other elements within the voting system that should improve the trust that we have in that data, but it's not absolutely perfect.
Probability goes way, way down because you don't even know which polling tables or districts have the closest outcomes to be able to manipulate them. So yeah, that's amazing. And then the Merkle tree aspect of it, which may be a little bit technical, but that really allows all of the information that you're uploading on the Bitcoin blockchain to be compressed in such a way, it's kind of layered in this. If you think of the tree, it's like the root of the tree is registered. But then if you dive down in it, then you can see all of the transactions that make up that tree. But that means you're not contributing to bloat of the Bitcoin blockchain, which has been a topic of concern in the last couple of years as we've had NFTs and things like that being written onto the Bitcoin blockchain.
Indeed, this is very efficient in terms of how we use the space on the block, so that even in a case where we are extraordinarily successful and this is widely used, this still would represent less than 1% of the total block space, meaning that the majority of Bitcoin is still money. And a small sliver of the database is used to provide an anchoring to all digital information in the entire world. And we believe that is a good, benefit and positive externality of Bitcoin. One last thing in terms of how to imagine this, it's almost like grafting. We build our trees separately, and we kind of graft them into the Bitcoin blockchain, right? So it's not, we're not creating our own token that you know we're selling to you. We're not creating another layer. It's literally we just have our own trees that we graft onto Bitcoin and use Bitcoin as an anchor, and it just continues to grow, right? So it's just having the discipline of when you create these trees, you keep very, very accurate records that anyone can reference, right? And so, for example, in Mexico, that just happened. It's a very similar scenario where I'm, flabbergasted that there's all this document, all these documents are put out there on the internet for anyone to change and manipulate and create fake ones, and then no real way to facilitate how do you know in social media who is lying and who is telling the truth.
So I'd like to maybe just kind of drill down on this point because it's important, Carlos. As Lynn, you mentioned, it's been, a topic of discussion and it's an important topic of discussion as we kind of look into Bitcoin's future. Bob Burnett speaks plenty to how costly the Bitcoin block space will be, right? So access to that is going to be contentious. It's going to be pricey in the future. What you were just mentioning, Carlos, is scaling this. Let's say you are massively successful and you're able to apply this data integrity concept globally, let's say, for many use cases. You were saying even in that scenario, because you use this Merkle tree implementation, you still would only be occupying roughly 1% of the block space. Did I get that right?
Less than that. So 250-ish bytes per block. Maybe a little bit more, but it arguably can scale to infinity minus one. And so what that means though is we can't, for example, we can't say that a document is, natively on Bitcoin, because to do that, you have to put the information. That's literally the issue, right? It's the data is stored elsewhere. So the responsibility is in the citizenry of keeping public records, right? And in the case of elections, that's what's so powerful is, yes, you can rely on the election authority, but it would be better if you don't only have one storage of documents in the public record that's in the state, but rather you empower citizens to also run their own nodes, per se, right? And effectively, what you use is Bitcoin as the common arbiter of how do we make sure that everyone's records of what they are interested in terms of public records, either voting records or, any kind of records, if it's put out there in the public domain, then you use Bitcoin as the anchor, right? The way to differentiate the signal from the noise. And so, for example, one of the use cases that we picture here in Guatemala is there was an unfortunate incident where the finance ministry's database, its cloud server, just was collapsed mysteriously for a few days, and financial data from Guatemala disappeared. And afterward, there were people that had their own copy, but how do you trust that something as important as financial records for a government can be, given back to the government by a citizen, right? Like, you can imagine in the past, it would have been a large warehouse of archives just kind of blew up, right? If you had copies, you could allow people to come in and reboot and provide a accurate historical record. But how do you trust people showing up saying, hey, I promise this is the real record? So if you have Bitcoin, then the hashes allow you to demonstrate beyond the shadow of doubt, like literally cryptographically and mathematically to a certainty that a certain piece of data is the exact same as what the authorities had. So in cases like elections where the data is in the public domain, then there's no reason not to do this, because not doing it means that you're running the risk that if something happens to the data, say maybe CrowdStrike decides to push out a new update and all of the systems go into blue screen of death, how do people trust the data afterwards, right? Like, I certainly hope that there won't be a blue screen of death on election night, but at this rate, I don't know that we shouldn't just hope that things don't go wrong. We need to be prepared for the worst case scenarios, because, you know, civil war could erupt, right? So we believe that it's important to take measures to protect.
So Carlos, that, I mean, just expanding this, I'm just, as you're talking about this, I'm thinking about all the hacks of financial companies and data breaches and things like this. So if a company also wanted to ensure that they had data integrity with their records, because in the event of a breach, not knowing if the records that were returned were the valid records or not, this would be a use case as well. Is that,
exactly right. It's yeah. That you've actually described our second client. So our first client was the Guatemalan National Election Authority. It was a relatively famous project that we implemented in Guatemala. It was the first time it's the first nation state use of Bitcoin to protect an election result record. And so locally, a lot of people find out about it. And we were reached out to by a university that handles sensitive information on behalf of the government. So they provide certain information services to the government, but it's not their data. And they are contractually obligated to demonstrate that the data that they handle on behalf of the government isn't manipulated. And so we are seeing a lot of interest from people in that private sector industry that's interfacing with the government to use Bitcoin as their insurance policy, right? Because if things go wrong, then the wrong answer would be, trust me, I didn't do anything. The better answer is, verify for yourself. Here is a public record that literally is on 50,000 computers all over the world, and you could download the node yourself within, you know, an hour or so, or however long it takes you to download a Bitcoin node and spin it up and verify, right? Don't trust, verify to public records is actually, in some cases, could keep people from going to jail when maybe they didn't do anything wrong.
This is just fascinating. Carlos, we generally start out our conversations with people talking about how they became interested in Bitcoin to begin with. And so we want to ask you that same question. But even more importantly, I mean, most people come to Bitcoin and they look at it as a financial asset or a way to increase their wealth or cryptocurrency. But you viewed it early on, apparently, as the entire technology. Can you tell us what your origin story was, and then how you connected the dots of Bitcoin to solve this problem, a simple proof?
Sure. So my pleasure. I was born and raised in Guatemala, had the opportunity to study in the United States, but then moved back. My family has a tradition of trying to, move back and build things locally. And so I was working with my father in 2009 through the 2010s, when one day we were unfortunately added to the, two of our family's businesses were added to the OFAC's list. And we found out by reading the newspaper. And so I reached out to the state, actually it was Treasury that manages that list. And it took them about 24 months to remove us from the list. In the meantime, all of our bank accounts were frozen. We had money in the accounts, and we told our bankers, like, you know, we're not, laundering money. We're barely making ends meet. And yet the answer was, if you're on this list, if we move any one of your dollars, we lose our SWIFT license. And if we lose our SWIFT license, there's a bank run. And if there's a bank run, then there's a bank run on the whole country. And so, we were basically unfortunately exposed to the weaponization of the dollar. And, my father's 30-year-old business effectively went bankrupt in the next as a result of that. And so I just, you know, when something like that happens to you and you realize your money is not yours, right? Any money you have in the bank is actually theirs, and it can disappear overnight and there is no due process. And afterwards, I just realized, you know, the world needs censorship resistant money, and I will do my darndest to make Central America win the race to adopt Bitcoin. And so around that time, I was organizing the blockchain meetups of Guatemala City. I originally, you know, Guatemala was very badly hit by the it's blockchain, not Bitcoin idea. And so that kind of confused our community for a long time. But what brought us together in these meetups was the idea that blockchain is going to save, you know, change the world. And you know, after years of organizing folks into this meetup, we were kind of fed up that no one was, you know, it's going to change the world, but when is it going to start, right? And many of us were deeply involved in the election system because, as I described earlier, it involves volunteers, right? It mobilizes people. And I personally fell in love with it. And I realized, wow, I started seeing parallels between a voting system and Bitcoin, and realizing, especially paper records and how we do our voting records, where everything is counted in front of everyone, that this kind of system is a proof of work consensus algorithm. And so democracy effectively helped me understand the difference between and the value of proof of work consensus versus proof of stake, right? And so just that led me to, with the meetup, meet my co-founders. And just as a result of that meetup, and that's why we're very excited and always support communities and people out there that saying, you know, if you're sick of just listening to podcasts by yourself, maybe you should, you know, get together with a few friends. And our experience was you start small, like literally the first meetup had, I think, like 5 people show up. And by the end of it, we had, you know, hundreds. And as a result of that, I met very talented folks that now, you know, Simple Proof is a direct result of that.
I mean, I think that, you know, we all tend to think, I mean, that's a terrible experience that you and your family had to be erroneously put on this list. But yet, you look at what's happening in the world today. This is September of 24. But what's happening in UK for, you know, publishing information that is considered contrary or insightful for, you know, and people being put in jail, and talk of that even in the United States. So we just don't know where things may go. But your point is correct that in terms of the banking system, if you're in the traditional banking system, you have the ability to be frozen out of it at any moment, depending on your actions, if they go contrary to whatever new law is put in place. So just wanted to red flag that, because even though people listening might think, oh, that's Guatemala, that could never happen to me. But don't, you know, just.
Well, yeah. You know, first they came for the Guatemalans and I didn't say anything. And then they came for the UK citizens and I didn't say anything. And then they came for me and no one, there was no one left. Right. So I think it's, and that's why seeing democracy as a proof of work consensus algorithm for me is the opportunity of reaching a completely different audience with a very important message about Bitcoin that's around truth. And so I think it's very natural that people immediately react negatively to, you know, you telling them what to do with their money, right? And you having this idea that, you know, magic internet money is going to save you from the, you know, hyperinflation. You know, I think it's a good thing that people immediately kind of defensively react against that. But through the democracy angle, we can reach people with a different attribute of Bitcoin, which is just truth. Right. And how do we know something happened? And there are other ways that people believe that something happened. But I'm convinced that Bitcoin is the best way. And over time, this will, you know, dramatically change humanity. Right. Of just if it's on Bitcoin, then, you know, it happened. Everything else is suspect. And so if that might be a message that resonates with more folk that haven't gone deep into the rabbit hole. And it just provides people with a different touch point so that hopefully in the future it's easier to orange pill folks and you know, have them reconsider what they've been led to believe.
Yeah, certainly, Carlos. I mean, just maybe very, very broadly, if you just think, how important will data integrity be going forward with this technology evolution that we're all going through, you know, whether you're talking about Bitcoin, whether you're talking about AI, or just, I mean, the economy's moving towards a digital world. I think that's very undeniable. And if you just think, how important will data integrity be, and why is Bitcoin a part of that? I mean, Bitcoin is the largest computer network that we have, right? And importantly, it's decentralized. So, I think just conceptually, you're certainly hitting a very clear pain point.
Well, I don't know if it's happened to you, but I look sometimes at files on my computer that I'm like, where did I don't remember doing this. And yet, you know, my computer says I did it, you know, 5 years ago or whenever. And if you don't have a clock that you can trust, then in the future, like it's just very easy to manipulate people and to manipulate the person that's most responsible for manipulating you is yourself, right? So how do you protect you from yourself and just keep your wits about you of you know, things that you did years ago might not be as easy to recall, right? And so these are tools that I think eventually will make its way into everyday life of everything that we do. The way we like to say it is we want to be as ubiquitous as a stapler, right? Like I have a little paperclip here on my desk, right? It's like it's having files around without a staple or without a paperclip on them to hold them together is kind of just weird, right? Like no one, like you have that issue on your desk, like you can suddenly like push some papers over and you lose control of, and you lose the sense of where they were. And yet in the digital world, we're just creating just enormous amounts of data. And what's holding it together? Like what's tying it to reality? In the digital world, the only network that is tied to reality through energy is Bitcoin. Everything else is suspect. And so we just are lucky to have found an opportunity that we describe as a blue ocean, right? There are other people doing this, but we seem to be the only ones that believe that Bitcoin over time will be the most obvious and best way to do this. So just very excited to hopefully work in the US, right? Because there's plenty of records that are published to the internet that come November. And I'm just wondering, you know, how do people protect from people going online and creating narratives around fake records? Like, if you don't do this, I don't really know how else to do so. So,
Carlos, you had mentioned something about the meetups in Guatemala and the concept of blockchain versus Bitcoin, or Bitcoin as one of many blockchains. Why the Bitcoin blockchain, and why wouldn't, I mean, we hear a lot of blockchains and solutions being touted as being better because they're more energy efficient or they're more flexible. So tell, for anybody who's not as familiar with the differences, why the Bitcoin blockchain?
Sure. So some folks consider decentralization to be a spectrum. I think it's binary. You're either decentralized or you're not. And in the case of Bitcoin, it's the only network that has proved that it is decentralized. Whereas everything else, we don't No. And if it's not provably decentralized and you want to risk putting national security information on a database that may or may not be controlled by someone, why take that risk? If you could use something that you know because it's proven to not be controlled by anyone, why not use that one? So it's in the realm of national security. You know, I would hope that the people that are making decisions realize that there's, you know, no reason to take extraordinary risks, right? And the story of why Bitcoin became decentralized is, you know, kind of miraculous. And I still, you know, don't know exactly how it pulled it off, but here we are, right? And so basically, it's just the sheer volume of people that are contributing all over the world in every single country, every single continent, every single culture, every single language. Everyone at this point knows someone that is running a Bitcoin node. And that's not the case for any other database anywhere. So, yeah.
No, well, that's a great way to put it, Carlos. And maybe just a snapshot of moving to simple back to Simple Proof, the company. you know, what stage are you guys at? You know, who's the team? You've spoken to a couple of contracts already. I imagine you have some others in the pipeline. What are you, as a company, looking at in the following 12 months?
Excellent. Well, appreciate it. Basically, we've found in Guatemala that working in the elections is a very quick way to make a broad sector of society aware of this new use case of Bitcoin. And so it leads to other applications that are tangentially involved with public records. And so we have in the pipeline already things that we hope to come out with within those 12 months, right, of other aspects of the Guatemalan government and also a few neighbors that are keen to figure out how to leverage this, but then realizing, well, there's also, this is a global problem, so we are very interested in working with folks in the United States ahead of the November election. Our solution, because it's information integrity, doesn't require changing anything of the election process. It literally, like, information that ends up in the public domain, there, you know, county clerks that I've spoken to, at least, for example, print out their election results and just put them outside of the polling station so that people can go and see, you know, what the results are at their neighborhoods. That's fantastic. That is a great way to broadcast information. And then some people are doing that on their social media websites, right? They're just putting this out there. If they don't do that within the company's timestamp, they're just asking for trouble. And so we're very optimistic and hopeful that we can find people to work with and support come November, and that that will lead to further contracts in the United States, just like it's leading here in Guatemala. And then, you know, the team is still very small. We're three co-founders plus a small technical team, and we're starting to identify new talent. And so, yeah, we've finalized a pre-seed investment round and hope to come out in early 2025 with a seed round, and are looking for investors that, you know, might have ideas on how do we scale this quickly into government records all over the world.
So when you look at who would be an ideal investor for you, are you looking for beyond the investment itself, but you know, contacts into government agencies or introductions, or what other aspects that help Simple Proof grow?
Definitely. So it's basically anyone involved in the cloud infrastructure, government technology space, either in, you know, in any market really, but that kind of experience is exactly what we're looking to bolster, right? Folks that are already involved in providing particularly information technology services to government agencies, we would really like to work with them because that's who we can benefit. More broadly, it's, you know, folks that have experience growing companies at rapid scale, because we expect that it might be pretty aggressive growth because of the nature of the software. It doesn't require necessarily a very large team, but it can grow quickly, right? So yeah, that's, you know, please reach out.
And what is the monetization model? So how do you make money?
Oh, for sure. So, well, as I mentioned, because we are being very efficient with the data that goes onto Bitcoin, all that we're using Bitcoin for is our clock, right? It's the only clock that no one controls. And so it's very, very low impact on Bitcoin. But then that means that we keep records of it outside, right? So it's our immutable backup service includes a hosting of all of the files, a hosting of all of the proofs. Imagine the staples that go in with every single file, so that because every single individual file has its own unique path to how it traces its origin back to Bitcoin, right? So it's literally like every single file has its accompanying file that traces it to reality. And so kind of data management software that is tricky. And basically what I showed you online is a means by which we make that very intuitive user experience for particularly citizens or, you know, anyone that is involved in the process who may have concerns and wants to have that experience be as simple as possible, right? So we focus on making it a very easy user experience. And so every single one of those documents, we charge roughly average $1 per document. And so that's the monetization, right? Every single document that's generated, we provide that document storage and user experience interface that, you know, provides an opportunity to also renew the contracts on a recurring basis. But of course, we also work with the governments so that they can actually build that out themselves, since it's all built on open source protocols, so that technically the government could then, you know, just learn from what we did and create them themselves. What we have found so far is that they prefer to rely on our, you know, professional services to make sure that everything is working smoothly.
Well, my question is, I'd love to see this being utilized by more county clerks or states, you know, obviously federal elections would be the gold standard. But in light of that, I mean, how long does it take you to set something up? So for someone listening to this podcast that's either a Bitcoiner or not Bitcoiner, but just wants to help ensure election integrity, what is the process for connecting with you, and how long would a verification system take to implement?
Fantastic. Well, if you go to simpleproof.com, you can, you know, send us a note through there or reach me on Twitter. I'm Carlos Toriello. We're also on Noster as Simple Proof, so just reach out. We are looking at a pilot right now where we are taking publicly information that's in the public domain that's produced by a county clerk. In that, it's a small county that's producing barely, you know, less than 50 documents, and there's a very simple process where it only requires one step, where one person basically hits one button and those documents that are going to their social media, going in the public domain, before doing that, they will be timestamped so that if when they enter the public domain, someone tries to, you know, create a disinformation campaign, they can easily, you know, differentiate that. So it's literally a very small pilot contract that's going to be implemented within less than a week. And so if you are a county clerk and you are working and you're concerned about disinformation attacking your local election, like, we can start small with just the information that you're already putting out there into the internet. We don't want access to the ballots. That requires special, you know, security clearances and all sorts of other considerations. But there's a lot of information that goes on to the internet. And so it's just a very simple process that is one step, one click, and $1 per document. In a 10,000 person county that we're working with, it's less than $50. And yet they might become the first county in the United States to use Bitcoin to protect their democracy. So if you want to join them and become the first county to use Bitcoin to protect democracy, then please reach out.
Well, it sounds simple enough, Carlos. You're able to you know, kind of pilot using already public data, right? So that certainly helps with the implementation cycles. I mean, you know, it's been a very interesting conversation, Carlos. It's certainly something that needs to be addressed, right? As we kind of go through the ups and downs of not being able to know what's real and what's fake with digital information. And I mean, the way you're doing it, it makes a lot of sense. I mean, I'm not a cryptographer, but the way you explain it, certainly just, I can understand how you're anchoring and leveraging the Bitcoin time chain, right? So yeah, wishing success.
Thanks.
Yeah, and we'll link to everything, how to contact you, in the show notes. And and also just want to really give a shout out to Open Timestamps Protocol from Peter Todd. I think we lightly mentioned it, but he's one of the original or one of the early Bitcoin Core developers and still is very active in the space. And he's been in the region. He was in, we'll also link to the 15-minute mini documentary that you have on the election process that just shows how that came, and he's featured in that too. But I think these technology innovators who create these open protocols are just champions that should be applauded and lifted up a little bit too. So we'll include all that. But any other final words for our audience, Carlos? I mean, it's a fascinating conversation. And I think you're solving a really big problem that's only going to get larger as disinformation continues to escalate.
Appreciate it. Well, we work very closely with Peter Todd and the Open Timestamps Foundation. And we, as we grow, we hope to further contribute to the underlying protocol continue to improve. I encourage everyone to look into opentimestamps.org. It's a useful tool that literally anything that's very valuable to you that you are concerned might, you know, become a contested issue in a court at some point, like literally go there, use it. You get your timestamps and protect your most precious data. It could keep you from going to jail or, you know, losing something very, very valuable. And for us, it's just, you know, we believe that Bitcoin is an anchor of truth in a sea of lies. And the madness that seems to be engulfing the world, at least in the case of elections, Guatemala has proven it's a choice. The tools do exist to allow people to regain trust in the institutions, but it requires folks to use the cryptography that has been built and, you know, not keep it a secret, right? We believe that citizens have the right to verify public records. And it's just a matter of putting it out there, right? Guatemala is the first one, but it shouldn't be the last. So looking forward to your speaking with folks that might be interested in, and, you know, Bitcoin is hope and Bitcoin is truth.
Thanks for listening to the Build with Bitcoin podcast. If you found benefit in what you heard in this episode, we'd truly appreciate it if you would like, share, or leave a comment on whichever platform you're listening, as this helps others find us, which is especially important for a new podcast. And as a reminder, our content is intended for educational and entertainment purposes only and is not to be considered investment advice or recommendation to invest in any company or asset mentioned in the podcast. Build with Bitcoin is a proud affiliate partner of River, a full-service, 100% reserve custody, Bitcoin-only financial services company. For your next Bitcoin purchase, use our exclusive link, partner.river.com/buildwithbitcoin. Thank you sincerely for being a part of the Build with Bitcoin community.